Good evening, and welcome to this special work session to hear a report from our Permanent Fund Review Board. Madam Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Ms. Tidwell.
Sorry. Here.
Ms. Sprinkle.
I'm here.
Mr. Ringstad.
Here.
Mr. Marnie.
I'm here.
Ms. Therian.
Here.
Mr. Cleworth.
Here.
Mayor O'Neill.
Here. With a quorum, I will turn the floor over to CFO Margarita Bell.
Oh, thank you, Mayor, and good evening, council members. I would first like to introduce and thank our Permanent Fund Review Board. You have before you Ms. Patty Mongo. She's the chair of the board. On my far right here, you have Mr. Gatewood, who is the vice chair and former council member. We have board member Dave Owens. He's not available. And then council member Valerie Therian is online as a part of the board. And we do have one vacant position. So if you know of anyone who would be interested in serving, please send them my way. You have two documents on your desk, one from me with the history since the sale of MUS assets. That's the white sheet. And then you have a booklet from our investment managers that will be covered in this session. I'd like to introduce our investment managers, and they're right here in the center here, from Alaska Permanent Capital Management. We always use the acronym APCM, and we have Ms. Brandy Nicolai right here to my right. She's the Chief Investment Officer, and next to her right, you have Mr. Blake Phillips, who's the Director of Institutional Solutions, and with that, I'll turn it over to them.
For those of you who aren't familiar with our firm, Alaska Permanent Capital Management, we were formulated in the 90s from Dave Rose, who was the first executive director of our State of Alaska Permanent Fund. He wanted to bring institutional-level investment management services to the state. Our firm has grown over time. We're managing and advising just over $5 billion entirely here in the state of Alaska currently. So as Margarita mentioned, I'm the Chief Investment Officer. My team is responsible for the Permanent Fund. And we put together an overview for you that we'll go over this evening. I just want to start by doing a little bit of a historical reflection because you have had great success over the past 28 years that we've been working with you. So if you look at the page that says 28 years of investment success, we all know that the Permanent Fund was established with the purpose of maximizing income and capital and operating expenses and to preserve assets for present and future generations. So if we look at the annualized account return since we've been working with you over the past 28 years, your average annual return has been about 6%. Now, the Permanent Fund's overall strategy and asset mix has changed and evolved over the years. And we started with just two asset classes, and now we have about 13 different asset classes. So within each of those asset classes, we own funds or managers that give us exposure to that asset class, with the overall portfolio having thousands of different securities, very well diversified. Since the Permanent Fund has had the current risk profile it has, the average annual return has been 7.5%. The market value ending December 2025 was $165.6 million. And since inception, there's been total distributions of $136 million. So with that, I want to point out the bar chart down below because this is just a bar chart of the distributions that have happened since 2016, just to give you some historical perspective. And I think there's an important key point here. You can really see that the overall distributions that are coming from the Permanent Fund are stable and growing over time, despite the fact that we do own a long-term risk profile for the overall asset allocation. If you look at the orange line there, that's the market value as we move through time. And we know post-COVID in 2022, we hit an inflationary spike in the economy, and it caused both stocks and bonds to have double-digit negative returns, and so you can see that drop in market value. But importantly, you can see the overall distribution remains stable at about $6.2 million. And that is really designed because we have thoughtfully created a spending policy for the permanent fund where you have a historical average that you look back on and then apply your overall percentages to that. And because of that historical averaging, you are able to have more stable and growing distributions over time. And that is part of the overall strategy, not just the overall asset allocation of how the permanent fund is invested, but also how the spending policy supplements the overall portfolio volatility. So with that, if you open up the pamphlet and you look on the left-hand side, we can take a look at calendar year performance and performance over time. The blue bar chart is the actual permanent fund portfolio. The orange bar chart is the strategic benchmark. Now, the benchmark is kind of your overall target portfolio. And you can see on a one-year basis, the permanent fund is up 13.9% versus the benchmark of 13.4%. We're really proud of that overall outperformance because the benchmark, recall, does not have any expenses associated with it. So we have been able to earn back the overall underlying expenses of the fund and then some over the past year, predominantly because we made some kind of shorter-term tactical trades that have performed quite well over the past year. And then if you look at the three-year number, the portfolio is up 12%, 12.3 versus the benchmark 12.7, so fairly close in line. We've had a very strong three-year period for the permanent fund. I just want to remind everybody that we do think about the overall both positive and negative returns we think we can experience as we move through time. The portfolio has been operating within those projections. It's these stronger time periods that we've had recently that will help offset some weaker years, but I'd say overall the permanent fund is well on track to meet the long-term return goal that we've established. If you look down below on the left-hand side, you can see calendar year returns by asset classes. So we really think about all the different asset classes that the permanent fund has exposure to in three different buckets. One is risk control that you can see at the top. This is cash and bonds. You can see we had calendar year returns within those different asset classes anywhere between 3 and 7%. And then the alternative bucket is the different asset classes that are designed to act differently than stocks and bonds or help us during inflationary times. And you can see we had very strong returns within alternatives as well, up anywhere between 2% to gold up over 64%. And then the blue portion of the bars is what we call risk assets. These are global stocks, high yield bonds. The permanent fund owns these to help us with our long-term growth. And you can see across the board, we had pretty strong returns across every asset class. You can see standouts such as European financials, which was some exposure that we added early in the year, as well as semiconductor companies that we also have owned most recently up over 40%. So the environment that kind of created this backdrop where every asset class has positive returns really has to do with the fact that the overall global economic growth has remained positive. We had this big pickup in productivity, which helped corporate profits remain very strong. And then at the same time, we have a Federal Reserve who's begun cutting interest rates. So the Federal Reserve thinks that the inflationary pressure has eased enough to help them feel comfortable with beginning to lower interest rates to support the labor market. And in that backdrop where you kind of had this easing, but you still have positive economic growth and strong corporate profits, you can be in an environment and get positive returns across virtually every asset class. So very strong year. If you look on the right-hand side, just to give you a little bit of a glimpse in 2026 and what our firm is anticipating, before I go into this, I just want to remind everybody that APCM, we think about near-term market conditions, our annual outlook, so we can think about positioning the permanent fund portfolio for near-term market conditions within the investment policy guidelines that we're given. But then secondly, we have a longer-term, what we call strategic outlook over a 10-year horizon, where we work with the committee to think about how the portfolio allocation is expected to meet your long-term goals and objectives, and whether or not any changes need to be made. So with that kind of background, when we talk about our near-term market conditions on the right-hand side, you can see in the top left, it is anticipated that global economic growth will remain positive in 2026. That's important because when we look at the overall price of the stock market, it's not particularly cheap. So we're really going to need to depend on corporate earnings remaining strong in order to continue to have positive performance. On the top right-hand side, you can see that earnings growth across all the major economies is also expected to be positive, given this positive economic growth backdrop. So that's good. That provides a fundamental backdrop that can still produce positive equity returns, despite the fact we're coming off of a few years of double-digit returns. Down in the bottom left, we're looking at profit margins for just the broader large company stocks versus semiconductor stocks. And so we have sold some of kind of our broad U.S. large company positions and added a little bit of an overweight into semiconductor companies, primarily because these are the companies that are benefiting from all of the capital expenditures that big tech companies are doing to build out artificial intelligence. And we know our current administration has said building out all artificial intelligence capabilities as a national priority. And so we asked ourselves, you know, what types of companies could benefit from this capital expenditures, and certainly semiconductor stocks is one of them. And so the permanent fund owns a little bit more in that space than your overall long-term target right now. Additionally, in the bottom right-hand side, you can see we're looking at basically the price to earnings or how attractively priced different equity markets are. And the orange line there is emerging markets, which are attractively priced relative to developed markets and certainly U.S. large company stocks. The broad index that we get exposure to in the permanent fund has some exposure to key countries that are involved or can benefit from the build-out of AI, and so we're maintaining a little bit of an overweight there currently as we go into 2026. I'll just finish my remarks on the last page talking about planning for the future. So I mentioned APCM comes up with a long-term outlook to think about, you know, what are reasonable forward-looking returns over the next 10-year horizon for each of these asset classes. And the purpose of doing that is to assess whether or not the permanent fund can meet your stated goals and objectives over the long term. And so we update those projections each year. We review them with the committee. We discuss the overall return expectations for the current strategy, project out what we think distributions from the fund could be. And so if you look at the second bullet point there, we think that given the risk profile of the permanent fund, the most of the time, or 95% of the time, we think we'll be reporting annual returns anywhere between down 15.7% to up 30.5%. So recall that 2025 return was 13%, so well within that range. And over the long term, then, as we kind of have these different return profiles, we think that the long-term 10-year return will converge to about 6.8%, given the current strategy of the permanent fund. And so you have distributions of 4.5% on an annualized basis. So that leaves the permanent funds with projected earnings of about 2.3%. Now, you also have an inflation protection goal. APCM thinks over the next 10 years, a reasonable expectation for inflation is 2.5%. So there's been discussion multiple times at the committee level regarding the overall risk profile of the permanent fund, given the fact that you have this inflation protection goal plus a 4.5% distribution rate. And we have return expectations that are just shy of meeting that inflation expectation. The discussion is really important because we do think about risk from kind of two perspectives, the ability to take risk, and your willingness to assume risk. And so given the long-term perpetual time horizon of the permanent fund, you do have the ability to assume more risk. But the willingness arrives when we go through more difficult times in the markets. As I mentioned, you know, we think that the portfolio could normally trade down 15%. And in more stressful COVID-type situations, I think it would be normal to see an interim drawdown of over 20%. So the point being is that when you hit more stressful market conditions, you don't always have the willingness to hold on to your current strategy. And so when we look back historically at some of the financial crisis situations we've experienced, including the global financial crisis, I think there has been some disagreement in terms of, you know, how much risk should the permanent fund hold. I'm bringing this up because at the committee level, we've had discussions about evaluating higher risk profiles to make sure that you can meet your long-term objectives of inflation protection plus 4.5. But I think the willingness component of assuming more risk is also has to be discussed at the council level. So the committee asked me to address this just to see if you would like the committee to continue to have discussions regarding the risk profile of the permanent fund. But I think they're looking for some direction in that regard.
Okay, I'll hand this back to Ms. Bell. Do you have anything else to add? Or
I do not at this time, but I didn't know if our chair or vice chair wanted to discuss anything.
No, not really specifically, except if there is any direction that the council would like to see the committee move in, we would appreciate hearing that feedback, especially on the looking at an increased risk profile. If that's something that you want us to investigate, then if you could let Margarita know that so that we could start those conversations. Our next meeting is April 15th, so we'd be happy to do that, but it'd be good to give Brandy and Blake a heads up that that's one of the discussions that we'd want to have. But we have a good committee. We're short one person, so if you have any suggestions, please pass them on to Margarita. But we definitely have an active, engaged committee, and it's been a pleasure to serve.
Mr. Gatewood, did you have anything to add? And then I'll go to Ms. Therrien online.
Thank you, Mayor. I would just like to say that any of you, or all of you, are always invited and welcome to any of our meetings. Sit in, listen to the deliberations, participate if you like. We'd love to have you.
Thank you, Mr. Gatewood. Ms. Therrien.
Yes, can you hear me?
I can.
Oh, good. One of the things that we discussed was the issue of private equity. And because the audits take so long, Ms. Bell went and looked at some of the other municipalities, and some of them were not able to get their community assistance to them. Because the audits were not done. And depending on whether or not the council wants to try to risk that or not right now, it's taking almost a year for the community assistance to reach our finance department. And one of the issues in front of the legislature is whether or not we're going to get that more on a more timely basis. But the committee did not feel that they wanted to look at private equity right now, but to keep it in the background for something to look at, if I understood that right.
I'm seeing head nods.
Yes, one of the things that we do is we evaluate different asset classes or strategies that we don't have exposure to determine whether or not we can make a change in the overall permanent fund allocation to help you either increase your return or, decrease your overall risk profile. And so private equity or private market exposure in general has grown much larger than the publicly traded space in our industry. And we've had some discussions about the benefits of private equity to include return expectations that are higher over the long term relative to publicly traded equities. And we've actually had this ongoing discussion for quite some time. I do think that given the overall administrative challenges associated with private market exposure, we did decide to table that. APCM is going to be kind of monitoring the broader landscape to see if our industry changes in regards to how you can have access to private markets without the delay of the waiting for the audit. But that's a good example of some of the work that the committee does.
Any questions from the council? Mr. Cleworth.
Thank you again for coming up. I've got several and just some for your opinion on things. But I was noticing by asset class, as the years have gone by, that asset class that we see changes the categories. I don't remember seeing semiconductors or cybersecurity or even gold, for that matter, being separated out from commodities and other classes. Have you just kind of picked a few here, and how do you select what you show here?
That's a good astute question, because you're right, they haven't. We're showing here your core asset classes that you are normally used to seeing, and we're also showing our shorter term, we call them tactical trades. So because the permanent fund, for example, does own commodities as a broad asset class, you always see that in this overall return reporting. But then we did have increased gold exposure as we moved into 2025, and that's why we're showing gold in particular. So it's encompassing your core asset classes plus any shorter-term tactical trades that APCM did.
So using that, in the past, when he first dallied in gold, and Bernard will remember this, it was bought as a bundled deal with some other commodities. And he said, why can't you just single out a purchase of that or silver, whatever you're wanting to focus on? Mm-hmm. Say, well, it has to be like a mutual fund or something. We have to bundle it with some other things. Do you have the ability now to, let's say, rhodium is your metal of the day that you want to go after that, you have the ability to do that?
Yes, we do. And we are just having a discussion at the committee level that as we assess the broader markets today, there are now more exchange-traded funds than there are individually traded stocks. And so because of that growth in the broader industry, there's a lot of ways to access very specific areas of the market.
That's good. Mm-hmm. Treasuries. U.S. Treasuries, is there becoming more and more resistance to those, not just nationwide, but worldwide?
There's been a lot of headline discussion as it relates to moving away from Treasuries or the U.S. in general, just given the geopolitical risks that are currently in the environment. But when we look at the underlying data, we have seen still some very strong support for the owning and purchasing treasuries and still very strong fundamental support for the dollar in general. So there is some thoughts about that, but we're not seeing that broadly.
Yeah, just a little bit. There's been, I think, you know, since a lot of our more protection-oriented policies and nationalistic policies that had come out over the last year, via tariffs and those things, there's been kind of some pushback against dollar and some things going on with trade debris around. But the reality is that the U.S. dollar is the safe haven and the place for safety so dramatically above anywhere else in the world. To actually knock that off would be an incredible feat and something that we're quite a ways away. You see that come up, you know, it came up in the last week with Europe because they have $2 trillion of U.S. treasuries, and what would they do if they sold those? So you'll continue to, I think, hear those kind of things come up as what ifs. During the global financial crisis, there was questions about whether China would dump a bunch on and really, like, put it to us. We did not see that happen either. I think anytime you see kind of some rifts between any of our large trading partners, you could see those concerns come up. But the reality is that, you know, the U.S. dollar and the U.S. treasuries are by and far like the biggest safe haven. You have seen increased gold buying, but really like how much that has moved the treasury market, and that's at the central banks, is just modest. So I think you're going to continue to see that in the media, but the actual material effect that we're seeing on like the treasury markets or those ability to function is de minimis.
Okay. I'm just wondering, I mean, if we get into a real resistance on that, then how is the U.S. going to finance its debt, essentially? And I see some bad days coming. I hope it's not while I'm alive. But I see some coming here. Just a couple other quick questions. I noticed under the on page 3 there on the insert, your earnings growth access major markets, that China is quite a bit lower than the others. Is that because of the real estate problems that are holding them back? I mean, you keep hearing these glowing reports, and so this is a bit of a surprise to me to see it this low.
Yes, so since post-COVID period, China in particular has faced lower domestic demand. And at the same time, they're trying to diversify their economy given their dependence upon exports and their relationship with the U.S. And so as they kind of go through those structural changes and the fact that, as you mentioned, they have high debt levels given the overall real estate market, their economy is operating at just the appropriate level that they need to operate through the transition, and that's kind of creating a more subdued picture for earnings.
Interesting. We're out of gold now, aren't we?
We are out of gold.
We still have it in the basket.
It's in the basket, but it's not emphasized.
As we set a new world's record today.
Gary, you're scaring me.
The parameters. I've always wondered if, and this is for the committee as a whole, really, question, if the parameters inhibit us to a degree. You folks have to comply with our ordinances and the parameters that we have there. We've often talked about getting rid of those and putting the onus of performance solely upon you folks, and so that you cannot say, well, we have fulfilled the parameters, we haven't exceeded or gone under, and we know we've done what the ordinances say. If you were us, would you work to remove those or keep them as is?
I would keep them as is. I think that it's important to know that there is upside risk associated with that change. If the manager, whether it's APCM or any other manager that you worked with, was able to consistently outperform the broader markets, there's also a lot of risk associated with making one wrong call. And so you have a long-term horizon, which does lean towards the ability to assume more risk. But I do think that you also, because you're dependent upon these assets for budgetary purposes and the fact that you want stable and growing contributions from this fund to support your budget, you wouldn't want to give a respective manager the ability to have wider reins to, you know, make different larger calls in the portfolio and end up making one wrong call and really have a large impact to your overall budget. Mr. Gatewood?
Well, Mr. Cleanworth, you know, this is the people's money, and you all are the people's elected representatives. Having been on that side before and just coming onto the council in 2008 when all hell was breaking loose, and the council got very, very involved in the Permanent Fund Review Board and just how the distributions and allocations were going to look and what we were going to get out of and what we were going to stay in. it may have cost us a little bit long term, but in the short term, that certainly seemed like the thing to do because we were hemorrhaging. not just the parameters of the ordinance, we have to also consider the reason for for the fund, whether it be that a portion of this money goes into your budget, goes into the work of the people for each year. We got to consider that, as well as just the future, you know, just making sure that there's something for future generations. We don't want to piss it all away on, you know, one good hunch that turns out to be a bad hunch.
So you're happy, pretty much happy with the way the ordinances read right now?
Well, yeah, because we tweak it from time to time, and we look at it quite frequently. And if it seems to be too burdensome, we'll come back before you and ask you to loosen it up a little bit.
Well, thank you for your opinion, sir.
So,
Ms. Bongo?
Yeah, thank you. Actually, it's nice to have the ordinances there. I think it does give us a target to meet, and it's very, you need to have those limits, right? And so it does help us, but whenever we've had, when Brandy's brought up something or one of the other members has brought up an opportunity and we've discussed it, and when we brought it back to the council, you know, Valerie's brought a few things to the council, and you've always supported them, and so I think that it works really well the way it's set up now, and I think we're very comfortable with that, having those ordinances in place.
Ms. Therian?
I know Dave Owen thinks that we should take more risk, and because he is concerned that we can do better if we look more at what the stock market is doing. And so I just wanted to...
Is that the technology of that one?
Could you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Therian. Mr. Marnie.
My quick question is, how often a year do you guys meet? I hear it's April.
We meet quarterly.
We have quarterly meetings.
Okay. And where are those at?
Here in the Meeks.
Meeks. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions or discussion? Ms. Sprinkle.
Okay, you guys are the smart ones in this situation, but I have to say the tariffs they just continue to scare me. Are we worried about them next year with this volatility we've got? Is that I assume it's a concern, but how do you protect against that?
So I'll say that I do think that the current administration has made it clear that tariffs are a tool that they'll use in the negotiation process. And so we've already seen that more this year in regards to tariffs against Europe. I think we'll continue to see it. I do say that, we are cognizant of the fact, whether it's tariffs or any other sort of headline risk, we have to own some asset classes that act differently than stocks and bonds. And so we do own within our alternative sleeve some stabilizing asset classes that are meant to, you know, perform differently than stocks and bonds, and that does help us in that regard. And regardless of the headlines in the conversation, when we've seen spikes in volatility in the markets in reaction to policy announcements, treasuries are still a safe haven, and the permanent fund also owns a decent amount of treasuries. And so we do have some more stabilizing asset classes. Our goal with the permanent fund is to own enough asset classes that act differently in all different types of market conditions, not just good economic times. And I think we've done a good job diversifying into those.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else? Any final comments from Ms. Bell? Or the chair? Ms. Mungo?
I just would like to thank the committee for all of their time, the review board. As mentioned earlier, they take their job seriously, and they really analyze every aspect, and they don't make a quick decision. They look at every aspect of it before they make any decision. And so I commend them, and it's definitely a pleasure working with all of them, and I appreciate their time. Every quarter they come in and they're engaged, and they take this role on the board very seriously. and I thank them for it.
Well, thank you so much for your presentation this evening and the discussion. It's always very interesting and learn something. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, and with that, our work session is adjourned.